Blog Talk Radio.
This is for you, Kings fans, wherever you may be. All the frustration and disappointment of the past is gone.
Welcome to Jewelcast. I'm here with Derek from Fear the Fin today, or used to be Fear the Fin, and now he's just a happy troll, I think.
Yeah, it's a pretty good, yeah, happy troll is a pretty good distinction. Thanks for having me, and I know it's been a little tense in terms of relations between Sharks fans and Kings fans for the last 2 weeks, but I'm glad that tonight we can all come together on something we agree on, that it's going to be hilarious to watch the Ducks blow another Game 7 on home ice.
I think it would be more hilarious if I wasn't so much more intrigued by the Ducks playing the Sharks than by the Preds playing the Sharks. Like, I just don't care about the Predators. I care a little bit about the Ducks, and it's such easy Twitter content to post about how bad the Ducks are and how annoying they are. I don't know anything about the Predators, and I don't want to make jokes about Mike Ribeiro, who's disgusting, and I don't care about Shea Weber. I don't care about Ryan Johansson. I don't care about those people. I want to make fun of the Ducks, so I'm very disappointed.
Yeah.
I'm very disappointed that the Ducks
are
absolutely going to blame this.
Absolutely. I've got zero material for the Nashville Predators. I guess they're, I don't know, Shea Weber isn't as good as he used to be. Is that, can I stretch that out over 4 to 7 games?
Hopefully 4 games. Because I can't come up.
That would be. Right. I mean, the difference between, like, Caps, Pens, and then the Islanders Lightning series and a Sharks Predator series in terms of intrigue and national media coverage is going to be stark.
Yeah, like, it'll be the series that, like, 3 people watch, and they're all Sharks. Like, even Sharks fans, it's like, do I really want to watch this game? Like, I don't want to watch the Predators. I hate watching the Predators. When the Predators play the Kings, it's terrible. And they've played some exciting games, and it's still terrible. I hate that the Ducks are doing this to us.
I know, specifically to me, yeah.
Specifically to you. Like, they're not doing anything to me now because the Kings have exited the playoffs.
Right, no, no.
Rather
but,
ungracefully.
I mean, this has all the makings of another massive Bruce Boudreauing. He's got Clayton Stoner in the lineup. He's, like, preparing. He's, like, wearing 2 sets of underpants today because we all know what's going to happen behind that bench tonight. And I don't know. I really don't think they're going to win this game.
I don't either, and it's
just because the one time I actually do want the Ducks to win a hockey game, sort of. I mean, I think Nashville would be an easier opponent for the Sharks, but it won't feel the same if the Sharks go all the way and don't beat the Ducks in the process.
Right, like this is kind of how it felt in 2014. Like if the Kings were gonna do it, if their Kings were gonna do it again, it had to be
to
beat the Sharks, had to beat the Ducks, had to beat Chicago. Like that was a great way to do it. It was like the retribution tours, the Battle of California. The Sharks beating the Kings is absolutely the correct start to the way this goes for the Sharks. It's the perfect way. I mean, I think beating Chicago would probably be good for them too, but you know, Chicago's terrible, so there's not much you can do about that. Beating the Blues would also be fun because I think the Blues did eliminate the Sharks about 3 years ago or four
they
years
did.
Ago.
That was like the one playoff series that they had ever won before Monday night.
Yes, going back a little bit, I think the one, like I made a joke one time recently about how the only series that the Blues could win was against the Sharks because they're both playoff chokers and somebody had to win that.
Exactly. Yeah.
But now I can't say that because the Kings are a joke and the Blues have beaten Chicago, which means they're temporarily in my good graces. I love the Blues for like the next 10 days. I hope they beat the Stars too because I hate Dallas. Fuck Dallas.
Yeah, Dallas is pretty awful. They can eat shit in that series.
Yeah, that's pretty much how I feel. Do not want anything good for the Stars whatsoever in that series. I hope that Jamie Benn comes down with some serious I hope he gets the mumps. I hope he gets the mumps. Just going to go with mumps. I hope his jaw is swollen.
Right, yeah. If he's hanging out with Drew Doughty and Corey Perry and Trash Avenue or wherever they live together, he probably has the mumps. He probably has several diseases.
Speaking of Corey Perry, good quote coming out of the end of the LA series from Drew Doughty saying that he would rather not hang out with Corey Perry than Logan Couture, which is like the shadiest thing you could ever say about a person, is to say you'd rather hang out with Corey Perry. I don't know what happened between Logan Couture and Drew Doughty, but I kind of want to know, like, did Logan Couture eat the last dead rat? Was that what happened? Like, were they like splitting like a box of dead rats and Logan Couture got the last one? I mean, I think Logan eats his own kind. So I think they both eat dead rats. What do you think?
I think Doughty probably got too close to Logan and just instinctually his hind legs kicked up and hit Doughty in the face, and he just hasn't been able to forgive him for that.
That's a good call. I like that call. That's probably more likely than dead rats. But I think, like, that's one and two. It's one and two. It's like,
there aren't many groups of three NHL players among which Logan Couture is obviously, like, the least awful. But I think we finally found one.
I'm going to take Corey
Perry
over Logan
as
Couture.
A person.
I'm going to take Corey Perry.
Oh, you're going to argue that Corey Perry is less odious of a human being than Logan Couture?
I'm going to go with that because I'm pretty sure that Corey Perry has never taken a picture of his mom's thighs and put them on Instagram.
This is true. But Corey Perry also doesn't have a mom. He was, like, spontaneously spawned in, like, a vat of hot dog grease.
True. He did that. It's pretty much – I thought that it was just, like – pond scum that had been covered in used oil and lit on fire, and then the smoke went into the sky and just rained down a person. I thought that's what happened.
Right, yep. Yeah, this is true. It's also possible that an anal cyst came to life and developed anthropomorphic features, and that's now Corey Perry. So, there are a lot of – that. See, this is the thing. Like, we've got to – the Sharks have to play the Ducks in the second round. I can't let the Corey Perry origin stories hashtag just rot away.
So in bizarro Jewelcast world that is called Thornton Cast, we're now rooting for the Anaheim Ducks to win a hockey game tonight.
Exactly. Yeah.
Everything.
That's a hockey game. We're rooting for them to win a game seven. Yeah.
Everything bad that could happen has happened in the last week, and now we're cheering for the Ducks. This is horrible. But
this
it's what we are now. These are the people we are. We like the Ducks for a night.
Yeah.
Who's even on the Predators? Don't they have Cali Yanker? I think his name is Yanker. Is that right?
Isn't this? I think his name like translates into English as like Iron Hook or Iron Claw or something awesome like that. So I'll give Kelly Yarncroak a pass on.
Okay, Yarncroak. I should be able to remember that Yarncroak because it sounds like a cat is dying. I got it. who else is on the Predators? Who should we be looking out for tonight?
I think Kali is also how people from Boston pronounce Ted Cruz's new running mate.
True, Cali Fiorona probably is how they say it.
Yeah. Who else is on the Predators? I mean, I guess Ryan Johansson is now their number one center, and honestly, he looks really good. I would not be thrilled about going up against him, but they've got James Neal, who's almost out healing a team that has Corey Perry and Ryan Kessler on it.
It's really impressive watching them work. It's like I'm pretty sure Corey Perry and James Neal are like the pairing that was meant to be, like, throughout history. Like, they had to meet up. I'm like, it wasn't going to happen with Dallas because Dallas is trash. So, and it wasn't going to happen with Pittsburgh because, I mean, Pittsburgh was
never making another final.
Never going to make it that far, and Anaheim was going to make it that far. So it had to be here. It had to be this meeting now where we get James Neal and his unbelievably greasy hair against Corey Perry and his parents that don't exist because he's not a real human being. And they're facing off now in this unbelievable trash off, like when your neighbor is like cleaning out your like their garbage and you're like really mad about it, except Corey Perry didn't get mad about it. He just threw out more garbage. Now you just have these two piles of garbage that are on the street with each other.
Speaking of Corey Perry, does he have a goal in this series? I doesn't without looking it up.
There's a good chance he has as many goals as Jonathan Toews. I think they have the same amount of goals.
Yeah. And, like, there was that series against Detroit a few years ago, back when the Red Wings were still in the better conference, where Corey Perry also went without scoring a goal. And this gets, like, zero coverage. I mean, I guess because they won a cup when they were 20 years old, they're immune from any sort of playoff criticism. I'm talking about Perry Getzlaff here. I just don't get it.
I mean, they won a cup way back when other players were still on that team.
When they had Dustin Penner was a game defenseman.
They had Chris Pronger, maybe the greatest defenseman of his era, and they had Scott Niedermeyer, who was
maybe like
in the prime of his career
at
that. Like maybe not the prime of his career, but still an absolutely top 10, top 5 elite level.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And they had Teemu Selanne, and they had all these other guys.
Andy McDonald when he was still good,
Way before, he got ruined by concussions. And
right.
Then you had the kids that were the second line. It was the kid line. They weren't the main part of that team. And since then, Anaheim's best run was last year when they lost in another game 7.
At home. Yep, exactly.
So I have been informed that Perry has 0 goals in this playoff series. He is just like Jonathan Toews.
Nice.
And probably both of them are going to be out of the playoffs after game 7 tonight.
Unfortunately. On Perry's part. Fuck the Blackhawks.
They're terrible. I'm not upset about that at all. It's been a pretty good couple of days. Like, as far as losing in the playoffs goes, this has otherwise been a great first round for me. Like, I think what's the biggest surprise in the first round is probably the Islanders beating the Panthers, which doesn't upset me at all because I don't care about either of those teams.
Yeah, that one busted my bracket. But, yeah, apart from that, I mean, the Sharks beating the Kings, especially in 5 games, was a surprise, like, even to me. But I didn't really see them disposing of the Kings that quickly. Obviously, it was a much closer series than 5 games indicates. But
are we sure it was a much closer game than the series than 5 games indicates? I think the only other game the Kings really deserved to win, or not even deserved to win, but were in the contest, was Game 2. And I thought the Sharks looked by far better than the Kings did in that series. And it's a small sample. Like, I'm surprised the Kings played that poorly. But I thought the Sharks, clearly, 5 games sounded about right to me. The Kings had no business in that series.
Yeah, no, that's fair. I guess the only thing to come back to is if Jonathan Quick plays like anything resembling an NHL goalie, I think it's a closer series. He was awful.
He was terrible. It was the worst I've ever seen him play, I think, for a 5-game stretch, which is actually saying something because he's had some rough 5-game stretches. But every time the puck was in the Kings' end, I had no faith in Jonathan Quick. He was as out of control in the net and the crease as I've ever seen him. He was all over the place. I might have even noted that he looked bad in the last game of the season against Winnipeg, that he was just a little out of control, and I was hoping he'd get it together and refocus for the playoffs, and he did not do anything resembling refocusing for the playoffs.
Glad you brought up that Winnipeg game. I mean, just to twist the knife a little more into the backs of Kings fans, I mean, they blew a 3-0 lead against the Winnipeg Jets, or else they would have avoided the Sharks entirely in this round.
Yeah, we could have totally lost to the Predators in 5 games instead of the Sharks, so that's good. I don't think it would have gone any different for the Kings because they just didn't play very well. And I know the expected goals and the Corsi came out pretty even, at least through the first 4 games. I think the Kings were down 1 expected goal through 4 games. I didn't look after the 5th game. But that's mostly because the Kings fell behind really early and then played catch-up the whole time. The Sharks had no reason to put their foot on the gas pedal. The Kings were playing a score-affected series like the entire series. That's the only reason. Close.
They led for 4 minutes of the entire series.
They led for 4 minutes and 2 seconds, which was 18 seconds away from being a perfect number. The Kings couldn't even fuck up correctly. It was it was terrible. It was such an embarrassing series. I mean, you go down on the first shot 3 times and on the second shot in the 5th game. They did nothing well. They didn't defend well. They didn't play very good offense. The Stars weren't there. I mean, Drew Doughty was horrible. Kopitar was okay. Carter was pretty invisible. Toffoli, my large adult son, was not very good. Nobody was very good.
He had no impact. Yeah, he had no impact on the series.
Yeah,
he really
didn't.
I was shocked by that. Yeah.
And I don't know why. I mean, you can't say it's because he's not any good in the playoffs because he had a good playoff run already. He's had actually a lot of playoff success already in the NHL. So I don't really don't know what happened with him. It was embarrassing.
Yeah, him ripping a slap shot past Antti Niemi after Brad Stewart made an unforced turnover in the defensive zone is like forever etched into my memory. I guess it doesn't have to be anymore because the Sharks finally got over the hump.
The Sharks got their narrative moment. They got – I think – I felt like going into the series, I mean, it was too fitting. Like, the Sharks had to win that series. They had to – or they would forever be the Buffalo Bills of the early 90s of the NHL. It was going to be what they were. They had no other option.
Yep.
It was just like, oh my God, it's the Sharks and the Kings again. The Sharks lose, and that's just the forever fate. And it had to be the other way. And I'm glad. I'm kind of glad in a way that it is the other way, because it's fitting. It's symmetrical. It's right.
Yeah,
it's
keeps
just
the rivalry alive for like a few more years. Yeah, until Milan Lucic eats up all the Kings cap space and they never make the playoffs again.
I mean, I'm not too worried about Milan Lucic eating the cap space, just because, I mean, the Kings are probably going to be bad without him. He was a good player this year. I will say that about Milan Lucic. I was surprised. He was a good player. Effective. Didn't throw nearly as many temper tantrums as I expected. He only threw like 3, which was, I expected like 15. So, hey, way to go, Milan Lucic. Only 3 temper tantrums that embarrassed me. That was good.
Yeah, whatever they were feeding him down at the swamp where he lives with his ogre family, I guess it wasn't having the intended effect.
Yeah, they did a good job with his
Milan
with his
Lucic looks like Shrek is the joke. Yeah, he looks like Shrek.
I think we got it. He does look like Shrek.
Yep.
He seems to really enjoy Los Angeles, but he is a UFA. It's hard to tell though, because I think most free agents say when they're about to leave a team, unless it's really a special circumstance, they're like, yeah, I'd love to stay here. But it seems legitimate in Lucic's case. I hope he gets to free agency, just because I'm pretty sure Jim Benning is going to throw him about $100 billion.
Oh yeah, he's going to unload a dump truck full of money in Lucic's driveway.
And Lucic is, I mean, he's going to have no choice but to go to Vancouver if it gets to that point. But I would not at all be surprised if the Kings just re-sign him first. Again, Milan Lucic only 27, not super old. So re-signing him, especially for the next 3 years while the Kings are still going to be relevant, not a terrible idea. After that, the Kings are going to be in real trouble anyway. They don't have much of a pipeline coming on the way with prospects. They don't have – their core is aging. I mean, Kopitar and Carter have showed some signs of aging this year. Jonathan Quick, I think recently John Rosen referred to him as part of the Holy Trinity of the Kings core, which is always open for debate, but even as an above average goalie, I think Jonathan Quick is. He's aging and he's had some injury trouble in his career with his legs, which is pretty much his bread and butter as far as his goaltending skills go, because it's certainly not his fundamentals.
What is it, 7 more years of your goaltender aging and having injury troubles more than anyone else's?
Pretty much. I think it's 7, maybe 8, because I think 2014, his contract had just started, and it was a 10-year contract, because I haven't seen that tweet enough times yet in my life as a Kings fan, where the Kings guarantee that their goaltender will be better than everybody else's forever. And I think this series fundamentally proves forever that Martin Jones will be the better goalie. I mean,
oh,
it just
absolutely
proves it. Factually.
I mean, you said it on the podcast before the series started. I mean, this was going to definitively determine whether Jonathan Quick or Martin Jones is the superior goalie, and Jones won the series. So
Jones won the series? Jones
can put that debate to bed forever.
I've always loved watching Jones play goal. I will say that before Jonathan Bernier fell apart, I loved watching Jonathan Bernier play goal. They both have a very calm style, which, especially compared to Jonathan Quick, is like – it's like being in a state of nirvana, like as you watch them, because there's no goalie like 3 feet out of the net with an open net diving back or doing the splits, which is exciting and it's fun to watch, but it's also horrifying, as it was proved in the series when the Kings got pretty well throttled by Jonathan Quick's inability to stay in his own net.
Jones is basically the poor man's Carey Price, and I mean that with all respect to Martin Jones, who's done a really good job this year, and he's just so calm and collected in net, and you never really – I mean, even though he might not statistically be that much better than Antini, I mean, you feel just so much more comfortable as a Sharks fan watching him in goal compared to Miami.
Did he give up a bad goal in that series? I don't remember one.
I don't think so.
I can remember 5 or 6 that Quick gave up that were just legitimately terrible, and then several that were not very good, and then a couple more that you could probably blame Quick on if you looked hard enough. It was not a good series for Jonathan. It was, like I said, the worst I've ever seen him play, and then it was capped off by the incredible goal to make it 5-3 that was about a 2-mile-an-hour wrister from the circle unscreened that went through his 5-hole. It was special.
So the question now is, does Team USA still stick with him as the starter for the World Cup?
I mean,
no one wants to think about the World Cup right now, but
I mean, I don't really want to think about the World Cup in general just because the advertising for it is atrocious. But Jonathan Quick will absolutely start. Maybe Corey Schneider. He's American, right? I don't even know who's American.
Yeah, I mean, that would have to be the debate between Quick and
Corey Schneider.
Corey
Schneider absolutely should start. Corey Schneider is great. He's probably one of the five best goalies in the NHL. And Jonathan Quick is maybe in the top 10, probably in the top 15. He's not in the same league
cups.
As Schneider.
He's got the two cups, and Schneider has zero.
He's got the two cups. He famously was the Olympic starter when the USA did not medal. But he was, like, the third string goalie when they did come in second place, which none of these things sound very impressive when you put them this way. But I'm going to keep saying
I will say, even as one of Quick's chief critics, I guess, he did play well in 2014 in Sochi. But that loss was not on him.
No, absolutely not. I agree.
He was good.
He's had a lot of moments when he's been great, and he's been great generally in the playoffs, which is why this is a little bit surprising that he was so bad in this series. But it's not the first time. He was not very good in the first three games of the Sharks series back in 2014. He was not very good in that playoff run up until the final when he was excellent against the Rangers.
You wonder how much different the narrative would be around Quick specifically, but the Kings more generally if the Sharks had actually managed to close that series out in four or five games.
I don't know if it had been much different because the narrative was set in stone in 2012 because he was excellent in 2012. He was great in the playoffs, 941 save percentage. First Kings goalie that was any good that has been any good in ages. I mean, maybe all the way back to Kelly Rudy. It might have been that long that since the Kings had a legitimately above average goalie. So I'm pretty sure, I mean, the Quick hype train had been in motion for a long time. It's still there. I've seen, you know, our friend John say that nobody in the league could possibly think that Jonathan Quick is still a good goalie, which is not true. If I look at the JFTC timeline right now, I'd probably have to scroll five tweets to find somebody calling Jonathan Quick unironically an elite goalie. And that's, you know, that's fine. I mean, it's fine to think of Jonathan Quick and your own guy as an elite goalie, but I don't believe he is. I think that the facts pretty much back it up. It's the same thing. Like, I'm sure many people would praise Dean Lombardi for being a great GM, but I don't think he is a great GM, and they've had the benefit of good results and they've had the benefit of good timing.
And I guess the question now is whether they bring Daryl Sutter back.
Yeah.
Now his contract is expired.
I think they have been low key grooming Davis Payne to take over that role. I know John Stevens has been mentioned in the mix for a couple of head coaching jobs before. I think that Lombardi will definitely ask Sutter, but I think it's going to be pretty much in Sutter's court. If he wants to come back, it's his. If he doesn't want to come back, then I don't think the Kings would be too hurt or upset by it. I don't think anything changes for the Kings next year. Lombardi's still going to be in charge, so it's going to be somebody from the staff that's on the team now that gets the job. I think the only wrench in that plan could be if Bruce Boudreau leaves Anaheim. I know he really wants the LA job.
Oh, God, I was going to make a Mark Crawford joke, but this is so much funnier.
Bruce Boudreau loves the Los Angeles Kings.
To the Kings. Yeah.
Bruce Boudreau loves the Los Angeles Kings. It's incredible to me. If you look at how he talks about the Anaheim Ducks and how he talks about the Los Angeles Kings, you would honestly think he was already the coach of the Kings. He shits on the Ducks all day long, and he never shuts up about how great the Kings are. I think he predicted them to win the Cup in 2012. I think he said that they were by far the best team in the league in 2014 and said it would be an incredible test for his team. And he did like stop just short of saying we aren't going to win this series in 2014. Like he loves the Kings. He was in the Kings organization at one point. The dude loves the Kings. I don't know why. I mean, they had a chance to hire him back when they hired either Sutter or Terry Murray and they passed on him. But sometimes you stay clinging to that ex that was too good for you.
And he does rightfully so hate the Ducks, too. I mean, there was that quote after they dropped the first few games in Anaheim in this national series where he was like, oh, yeah, it's the same guys taking penalties every game. I don't know what to do about it at this point.
He looks so sad in this series. And it's like his team is about to go to the second round of the playoffs. And he just looks – you look at him on the bench and he looks like he's – like being told that he has a parking ticket or something. He looks like he's being told that his dog died. He looks so upset in this series. I wouldn't be surprised. Like the Ducks could win the series and he could quit the team on the spot. And I would not be surprised. Like even if they win, like he could quit and he'd be like, fuck this team, I'm out of here.
I would have loved to have been a fly on the wall after they lost game 6 in Nashville And Bruce Boudreaux found out he had to go back to Anaheim for another Game 7 at home.
He's you know, probably having some pretty good dreams right now, I think, about how it's going to go tonight. He's like, wow, this is what I love is Game 7s. In general, he's always had a lot of success in Game 7s. I think he's won one in his coaching career. And it was against the Rangers, and I don't think that actually counts. It doesn't count.
Did he win a Game 7 against the Rangers?
I think he did. I can look that up real quick.
I thought he was completely winless in Game 7.
I made a joke about Bruce Boudreaux losing all of his Game 7s, and somebody said that he won one in Anaheim. So now I got to check. I believe that he did win a Game 7 with Washington against the Rangers. I might be wrong. Let's see.
Yeah.
Very important.
Maybe it was that year when Sergei Fedorov was in the Capitals. 2008.
2008, they lost in the first round, I'm pretty sure. They won conference. They won the 2000. Nope, that was with Dale Hunter. Never mind. Yeah, Eric, my esteemed producer, has told me that he won 2008-09 against the Rangers.
All right,
there we go. Very important that we got that settled. He has won a Game 7.
Right, so
it is.
Okay.
He wouldn't be doing the impossible by winning tonight. It wouldn't be impossible. But he's never done it with this Ducks team, which means maybe he would be doing the impossible because the Ducks are trash.
They are. They really are.
But that's why we need them to win.
I'm still terrified of a Sharks-Ducks series if they do meet. It would be a lot of fun, but it would also be terrifying.
I think I picked the Ducks in my bracket in that series, but I feel pretty good that the Sharks would win. And that might just be because the Sharks look so good against a beleaguered Kings team, but the Ducks don't impress me much right now.
I think the Sharks would win too, but yeah, the Ducks have definitely had a rough past like month and a half, but
certainly not looked as dangerous. I mean, we'll see. It would be a good series. It's definitely, like, as aesthetically pleasing as all the other series are, it would be worth it to have the Ducks and the Sharks. So I really need the Ducks to win tonight. Bruce Boudreaux, I know you listen to all your Kings podcasts. Please, I know you're listening to this right now because you're Bruce Boudreaux and you love the Kings and you love listening about the Kings and reading about the Kings. Please win tonight. We're begging you. We need it.
Yeah, we've got, like, a lifetime supply of Häagen-Dazs ice cream just queued up waiting for you. If you win this,
we've got so much Ben and Jerry's, Häagen-Dazs, Talenti. We've got so much stuff. It's all yours. Please win. Okay, moving on. Dustin Brown. Dustin Brown is. I mean, we can eulogize
the
Los Angeles
Kings. Best contract in the NHL. Best contract in the NHL,
right? Hands down. We can eulogize the Los Angeles Kings. They're dead. We might need to eulogize Dustin Brown as a Los Angeles King.
Who would take him on?
I think there are a lot of teams that would. I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, the Kings definitely will have to attach something or eat cap, and I don't think they want to eat cap. So you're going to probably have to attach somebody like Adrian Kempe, something like that. It's going to be tough, but they could do it.
If they've got a deal Kempe to get Dustin Brown off their hands, I mean, that's a steep price to pay. I mean, they didn't have a first-rounder last year. They're not going to have one this year. I think Kempe was their 2014 first-rounder.
Yes, so it was the last first-round pick.
So that'll pretty much empty out the pipeline. But that would be hilarious. I mean, I could definitely see a team like Toronto taking on another bad contract in exchange for some incentive.
I don't think Toronto. I think the Toronto's at the point where they almost need to start flipping things around the other way. They've got a lot of young talent. Mm-hmm. But I just want to get what gets me on this thought is the LA Kings insider, John Rosen. He wrote his What Exactly Happened to the Los Angeles Kings in 2016. And he talked about Dustin Brown. And he talked about Dustin Brown very pointedly. Now, John Rosen, not a big guy on expressing his own opinions on the Los Angeles Kings. He does. He doesn't shy away from things, but he usually avoids really harsh criticism. And he pretty much went after Dustin Brown as hard as I've seen him go after anybody, which is fine, but it's pretty impressive. This is, I'm going to quote what he said here. Dustin Brown signed through 2022 at a $5.87 million cap hit. Pretty much already a dagger in Dustin Brown, by the way. That's just mean. Has
yep.
seen his ice time, his time on ice drop 3 minutes and 20 seconds from the season prior to which he signed his extension, while his shooting percentage and goal output have plummeted. There are still other intangible and leadership characteristics exuded by the accomplished Brown, but for the percentage of space occupied by his cap hit, strained by the $10 million annually that will now be afforded to Anže Kopitar and the excess reserve for Milan Lucic, which does shed some light on what might be happening there, as the two sides look to come to an agreement, the team is simply not getting enough in return for the handsome amount paid to the rugged veteran, and that rugged veteran being Dustin Brown. That's
I'm so pointed, hard right now. I'm
that's
so
as
hard.
Pointed of a con, that is as pointed of a comment I have ever seen John Rosen make about a king on his blog. And that includes – it's – I'm never going to accuse John Rosen of being mouthpiece. He's a great reporter. I genuinely enjoy his coverage of the Kings.
Yeah, he's awesome.
I would not be surprised if that was slanted in part by what might be coming. There has been a lot of rumblings about Dustin Brown leaving the Kings in recent years. I would be a little bit surprised if Dustin Brown is a King next year. I think he's done as a King, and they will find a way to get rid of him.
Yeah, I mean, it's really a shame that Dustin Brown is having such a great career, and then that goon Tomas Hertl just has to come in with his knee and just ruin a promising young career that was really burgeoning for Dustin Brown there. So
Dustin Brown has been an excellent King. I've loved Dustin Brown up until the past two seasons. He did develop a dirty streak starting with just a little before the Tomas Hertl hit. It was a little before that. Like, I think people made a big deal about Dustin Brown's hits that wasn't always warranted until that season. And he's been pretty quiet the last 2 years, but he did have a real bad stretch where he was making dirty hits, which is something that's always been not part of his game. And it's something he's been proud of, where he says, I'm a physical player, but I keep it on the right side of things. He didn't for a while, including that Hertl hit, and his play plummeted at the same time. So I love Dustin Brown off the ice, and I love Dustin Brown up until the point when he decided to become a bit of a thug on the ice. It was not as fun to watch for me personally. And then Darryl Sutter dropped him off the top line because the Kings got better as a team and dropped him out of the top six because Brown's percentages plummeted. And now we just have this $6 million third liner that's not doing a whole lot. And there's been a couple of times this season where people associated with the Kings, including Darryl Sutter, have referred to Anže Kopitar as the captain of the team. I don't know how much more writing could be on the wall. Like, we're running out of wall to write on. Dustin Brown is not going to be a King next year. The other thing that does...
Can we talk about how funny it is that Dustin Brown, who basically made a career turtling at the slightest hint of contact, he allegedly gets tripped. Okay, he was probably tripped by Martin Jones in Game 4.
He was definitely
tripped. And
he didn't
get the call. I mean, like, he was tripped. But, I mean, you spent your entire career being... For all intents and purposes, the best timer in the NHL. And that's not even a knock on Dustin Brown. I mean, he created a lot of extra value for the Kings by diving over the years. And somehow that becomes, like, the biggest story of the next 2 days. And maybe that was Darryl Sutter just using the media to take pressure off his team. But that was just hilarious to me that, I mean, Dustin Brown is not always going to get the benefit of the doubt from the officials because he's made them look foolish so many times over his career.
It was funny that it happened in that exact moment because there has never once been a time that Dustin Brown did not get his way with the referee. Like, been his entire career. Like, it stuns me both that players kept touching him at all because he would go down and that referees kept calling it anyway. Like, Dustin Brown just kept winning on that front. There was never a point when he just stopped getting calls until that exact moment when the Kings needed it most. They were like, fuck you, Dustin Brown. And it was kind of beautiful in a way. Because
it was
absolutely deserved for his body of work, but not in that moment. And that's just kind of funny. Like, it's kind of funny. I'm not going to lie. It's pretty funny. It was upsetting at the time. I was annoyed, but it's pretty funny.
Yeah.
Anyway, Anže Kopitar, future captain of the Kings. Dustin Brown, probably gone. Another thing that opens up is the Kings going into a potential expansion draft with the Los Angeles or Quebec team can probably be able to shed another bad contract in Marion Gaborik, most likely. I guess they could cut Jonathan Quick, but that will absolutely never happen. The Kings love
Jonathan.
Yeah, it's
not happening. Yeah.
So Marion Gaborik will also probably not be a King after next season, which is a huge benefit to the Kings. Probably if they want to remain successful after that. I love Marion Gaborik, but another player whose production plummeted this year. I don't think that'll stay up. I think he'll be a pretty good player next year if he stays healthy. But the Kings will get out of that contract, most likely, if he's available. I would, if I was a team building, I would absolutely take Marian Gaborik on my team. I mean, he would help the team right away. He would be useful in making the team competitive, an expansion team competitive immediately.
I mean, unlike someone like Brown, at least the cap hit with Gaborik is more or less in line with what he provides if he's relatively healthy in a season. It's just the term on that deal is pretty bad.
It is. And Gaborik, this season, not worth what he was paid. I think he played fine, just didn't get bounces. He still had lots of chances, lots of shots, just didn't score goals. It was a little unfortunate. So next season, I expect him to play better or at least produce better. But the Kings will get a chance to get out of that contract, I think, and I think they'll take advantage. And that's probably one of the reasons they want to get rid of Dustin Brown, is so they can do both those things. So Dustin Brown, probably not a King. Marian Gaborik, maybe not a King in the future. This is significant changes for a team that's been pretty excellent for about 5 years now. And then there are the Sharks.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what they do to rebuild the blue line, because there isn't a lot of cap space to do it. And I guess there's even the question of, do they really need to do it if Martinez is healthy and they've got a top four of Dally, Muzzin, Martinez, and I guess Braden McNabb. That's not terrible, but it's also not great.
It's a pretty good top four. It's maybe not the best in the league, but it's pretty good. I would take that top four most of the time. And then Matt Green on the bottom pairing, if he's healthy, that'd be a huge boost too. Matt Green is legitimately a good bottom pairing defenseman, so that helps too. They would have pretty good depth of attack on defense. They wouldn't have a real weak spot. I mean, they'd have to fill that sixth spot, but they could do that with a young guy like Gravel or Forbort or something like that. They'll probably trade Forbort, I think. I think his time as a King is done. They won't get much for him, but he'll be included in some deal or something. Maybe they get a draft pick in the first 100 rounds of the draft, maybe. But
I really think, as much as it would hurt me to see him in Kings colors, I really think Jason DeMers would be a good free agent fit as sort of the second pairing right defenseman. I don't know what his market value is going to be. It might be too high for the Kings.
I don't think anybody realizes how useful Jason DeMers was to a very bad defensive team. When I was running numbers on the Norris post that I did about Doughty and Carlson, the first thing I was going to do before I decided to settle on just Doughty and Carlson was actually try and narrow down who should win the Norris based on who's used in all situations and stuff like that. And Jason DeMers was in the top like 20 defensemen in the league this year. Like, he was excellent. He was awesome for a really bad defensive team. Like, he was good.
He's really good on the penalty kill too. I haven't really looked at his numbers in Dallas, but I just remember with the Sharks, he wasn't utilized as like their top unit penalty killing defenseman, but the results when he was on the ice were excellent. So
important.
He's a player who doesn't necessarily look like he's a dominant top four defenseman, but I mean the numbers definitely suggest that he kind of is. So he'd be a good ad for any team.
Also important is that he munches box. Very important. Got to be able to munch
right,
box.
Exactly. Yeah. No.
In Los absolutely. Angeles. So a good fit all around, because the Kings have at least two defenders in Jake Muzzin, Drew Doughty that do not munch box. So.
Oh, yeah.
Jake Muzzin, definitely. His beard is so grotesque that I don't know. That's bad. It's just a bad beard.
That's got to be painful, yeah.
You know what? I'm not a woman, and I'm not a gay man, so I don't know how beards feel down there, so.
Right, yeah.
Maybe it's enjoyable. I don't know.
Yeah.
You go, Jake Muzzin. I don't think you eat pussy. That's my opinion.
The Thornton cap, getting down to the real issues surrounding Los Angeles game.
Yeah, it's Thornton cast wouldn't be the Thornton cast if we weren't talking about making dick jokes and pussy jokes, so I guess so.
Yeah.
So, who was the best player on the Sharks in that series?
You know, I mean, I guess the obvious answer is Pavelski, but I'm going to say Brent Burns, because I think the final three games of that series are the best I've ever seen Brent Burns play defensively, maybe in his entire Sharks career, at least as a defenseman in the defensive zone on breakouts. He was basically unnoticeable in the defensive zone, which is something that has literally never happened with Brent Burns. I mean, even in the first two games of that series, you could see him just sprawling on the ice and making poor reads and just hurting the Sharks defensively almost as much as he helped them at the other end. But that completely turned around in the last three games of the series. I mean, maybe that was just a fluke, I certainly hope that he continues to play like that in the subsequent rounds. But he was really good defensively in the series beyond anything I thought he was capable of. And then he had 8 points in 5 games, which is ridiculous production from a defenseman. I think he was tied for the league lead when game five ended. I don't know if anyone's overtaken him since, but he had an excellent series. I think he was probably all around their most valuable player, or at least tied with Pavelski.
Now, Brent Burns, also, we need to figure this one out right now, and that's who is his favorite ska band?
I mean, I'm telling you, I think he's into that. He's into that underground 90s slapstick Janitors Against Apartheid wave of bands. I don't think he's a big Real Big Fish guy.
I can buy that on Real Big Fish. I do think that I'm 100% sure. I've never been more sure of anything than the fact that Brent Burns is a ska fan. I've never thought this about an NHL
it's
player before. It's
yeah.
You look at the way he dressed, and he is literally like if you look in the background, like you can see the Aquabats are walking behind him. Like they're back there, the posters right there. They're just like he's like the one of the unnamed horn guys in one of those groups. There's no question to me that he's one, been in a ska band, and two, that he listens to ska like while he stretches in the locker room or something like that. Like he definitely does. It's like they can't make him the DJ in the room because he just fucking keeps playing ska. And they're like, I'm so sick of this fucking horn shit. Stop it. And he's like, no, I will listen to my ska. And then he continues to listen to ska.
He'll tell literally anyone who listens that Losing Streak by Less Than Jake was a game changing album in the early 90s.
For sure. He also, like I said, I think he wears a leftover crack shirt under his jersey.
Oh,
I'm pretty sure. I think he's a big against all authority guy. Cause I mean, frankly, he's usually against all authority. If you look at his face, there's no way he's for authority. I think he's against all authority.
Oh yeah. No, he's against all authority. Not just some authority, just all of it.
All of it. Definitely an Op Ivy guy. He was big into Op Ivy.
Yeah. Yeah.
So again,
he didn't really like the direction that Rancid took, but
good.
Put on knowledge, and he's gentle on that.
And don't talk to him about the Dropkick Murphys. He fucking hates Dropkick Murphys.
Oh God, and Flogging Molly. I mean,
oh my goodness, just get them out.
These posers that don't even have horn sections. I mean, come on.
One thing he will do though, he'll tell you that No Doubt had a good album or two.
Oh yeah,
yeah they did.
Yeah.
He definitely likes No Doubt at one point.
A guilty pleasure, yeah.
So, yeah, that's the big thing that I think we've discovered in this series is that Brent Burns is definitely a ska fan. And I actually discovered it last year or 2 years ago at the awards because he literally showed up at a country club looking like he just walked, like he skanked all the way there from a ska festival. Like he looks like a ska fan. Like, I don't know how to word this any other way. And I know a lot of people probably are like, what the fuck are you talking about? Like, what's ska or.
No, people tuned out like 2 minutes ago. Yeah.
Because ska has literally been like nothing since the middle of the 90s when Real Big Fish inexplicably made it like into a Trey Parker and Matt Stone movie. So. It's been a wild ride for ska, but it's back with Brent Burns, I think. He's bringing ska back. Like, Justin Timberlake brought Sexy back. Brent Burns is bringing ska back, guys. It's coming.
And just while we're on that point, not just a Trey Parker and Matt Stone movie. I mean, Basketball is a modern classic.
It's probably the greatest movie ever.
I would agree. Yep.
I mean, I know some people like, you know, Shawshank Redemption or The Godfather. Basketball is definitely better than The Godfather.
I mean, No More Journey Psych Outs is perhaps the greatest movie quote of all time.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Totally agree. Quick apparently got nominated for the Vezina, guys. We're on – this is not a drill. Jonathan Quick nominated for the Vezina. 100%.
No way. Oh, my God. I love that. I love that so much.
He got nominated with Ben Bishop and Braden Holtby. Jonathan Quick nominated for the Vezina.
Holy shit. I mean, there's another multiple Stanley Cup winning goalie right there who actually had a good season in Corey Crawford. I can't believe Jonathan Quick got nominated.
I hope he wins. I really hope he wins.
Oh God, absolutely. Oh my God, I completely supported Jonathan Quick.
The greatest.
Yeah.
If Jonathan Quick wins, it would be the best moment in the history of hockey Twitter if Jonathan Quick wins the Vezina. Like, there will never be a moment that matches it. It would bring me so much joy because so many people would be so mad about it. They will
How
hate it.
How did this even happen? I mean, did he lead the league in wins or some stupid stat like that?
No, he was like 10 wins behind Holtby at the end of the season. He was under
wow.
920 save percentage. Way to go, Jonathan
Crawford,
Quick.
Didn't Crawford finish with really good numbers?
Crawford's season was, like, excellent. It was legitimately great.
Yeah.
He probably should win the Vezina.
Yeah, I remember him being almost close to, like, a 930 at one point.
He was up there, and he was pretty close to Holtby in wins.
The Hawks were not a very good team this year.
No, they weren't.
In terms of their underlying play, and Crawford was keeping them in games.
And I think even watching the Blues series, like, you know, he was really good. He was great in that series. He kept them in that series for portions of the game when they didn't really belong in it. I think Chicago definitely performed better than I expected, but it was definitely the Crawford show for a lot of that series.
Yeah, this is amazing to me. Quick was dominated.
Jonathan Quick, Vezina nominee. I think this is only the second time in his career, which is amazing. It's pretty great.
I remember, like, a few days ago, some Kings writer, I don't know if it was John Rosen or someone else, someone, like, tweeted out, like, a list of release dates for the award nominees that might be relevant to the Kings, and they had the Vezina trophy on there, and I almost was going to tweet something snarky about that. But I didn't. So it's hilarious that it actually ended up being relevant to the Kings.
There was a moment, there was definitely a stretch of time before the last, like, 10 or 12 games of the season when Jonathan Quick was, like, in the mix. Like, he was probably about fifth or sixth in the league, I think, and probably in what I would have at least gone for with the Vezina. But he was in the mix. And then the end of the season happened. He was pretty much torpedoed his own numbers. But it didn't really matter at that point. I think everybody pretty much had made their Vezina choices, like, back in December. Like,
yeah.
Holtby won the Vezina in November. Like, it's
right.
I guarantee.
And Drew Doughty won the Norris Trophy in 2012.
Drew Doughty won the Norris Trophy in 2016 at the Olympics in 2010. Like, that's when he won.
Yes. Yeah. It's, no. Absolutely.
Because nobody has watched Drew Doughty since then. Nobody has. They don't know if he's good or bad anymore. He might be terrible. They don't know. He won it in 2010.
Oh, man, this is perfect because people were making jokes after Game 5 that Quick should win the Vezina this year because he deserves it. And he was, like, he was in line for a Vezina trophy. So I hope he wins it.
I did definitely write a post about Jonathan Quick possibly getting the Vezina, mainly because I think a lot of voters, at least a lot of the GMs, probably say, you know, Quick is in that same mix as Doughty, where he's been in consideration as one of the best goalies in the league for a long time. Even if he doesn't deserve it, he's been considered one of the top five goalies in the league for the last 5 years. But he's never even, like, been a finalist for the Vezina, except for the 1 year he was really good in 2012. I'm not surprised. I am definitely surprised because the end of the season was so bad, but I'm not that surprised. I kind of called it when I wrote about him back in either January or February. So... go me.
Yeah, there were so many goalies who had better seasons than him. This is hilarious, yeah.
Most importantly, Corey Crawford was probably the best goalie in the NHL this season. He's not even nominated. He's not even in the top.
Schneider had a great year. I guess he was never getting nominated because the Devils didn't make the playoffs or whatever. He was really good.
Corey Schneider, excellent goalie. He is never going to win until the Devils make the playoffs and actually win him some hockey games.
Yep.
When I looked it up, every Vezina winner of, like, the last 15 years, or at least the last 10 years, has at least been within 5 wins of the league lead. There might be one exception. I want to say Tim Thomas might have been an exception to that. But Tim Thomas' save percentage that year was, like it was, like, 1,000, like, that year. Like, he was, like, a perfect goalie. Like, didn't give up a single goal all season, but still lost some games.
Basically.
It was –
yeah.
Pretty amazing, actually, that he managed to lose hockey games despite the fact that he didn't give up a single goal all season.
The reason he lost those games is because Sean Thornton wasn't telling the Bruins how many goals they need to score.
Right. He didn't tell them how math works, and they actually ended up with negative goals somehow. They ended up, like, with minus one goals those seasons. Like, it's happened, like, several times.
Yeah. Jonathan Quick finished with the same save percentage as Martin Jones and basically the same number of games. And I would never suggest that Martin Jones, who had a great season, but I would never suggest that he deserved the Norris, the Vezina Trophy, rather.
He might deserve the Norris.
Yeah, yeah, but definitely not the Vezina Trophy for this season. So this is great.
It's pretty funny. I'm pretty happy that it's happened. I guess that playoff series didn't solve anything because Jonathan Quick is the third best goalie in the NHL at the very least. Sorry.
Perfect. I'm so glad this broke during the podcast.
I am too, and I'm glad that, you know, Eric got my attention because I was not paying attention to Twitter. So more excellent work by our producer behind the scenes feeding us information. He is the silent host today, but silent but deadly. He's killing it. I don't know what else to talk about now.
I guess Trevor Lewis is now in contention for the Selke Trophy. I mean, there's so many possibilities.
Eric says we can stop whenever, but I say we just keep going. I agree that Trevor Lewis should win the Selke.
Yep. Yeah, and I think Luke Shen deserves Norris consideration.
Oh yeah. Luke Shen,
yep.
Give him the Norris. Like he was to the Kings, like in 2005-06. He was to the Kings this year as Joe Thornton was to the Sharks in 2005-06.
Unquestionably. And Jamie McVane was his Jonathan Chichu. So
absolutely.
He should get
Jamie,
some Norris consideration.
Jamie McVane, I mean, I think they should honorarily give Jamie McVane. Honorarily, I don't think that's a word, but I'm going to go with it.
Yeah.
Jamie McVane should win probably the Maurice Richard Trophy, I think, for sure.
Right. I mean, the criteria for that award is so vague.
It's pretty loose.
I really think Jamie McVane deserves consideration there.
A leadership award goes to Andrei Kopitar, captain of the Los Angeles Kings.
Of course. Who else?
I mean, he's not even the captain, but he is the captain. And it's a very important award, the Marc-Andre Fleury. I think it's the Marc-Andre Fleury Award for leadership in good.
Right.
Is that right?
I think Milan Lucic should win the Lady Bing, for sure.
Oh, yeah. He only had three tantrums this year. That was really good.
Yeah.
Three tantrums. Three. And one of them was in the first game of the season. That doesn't even count.
Exactly, and I mean, who else are you going to put on the NHL 17 cover than Dwight King? I mean, he deserves it.
You know, I was going to say that we give him the Art Ross, but I like your idea better.
Really?
Dwight King.
Okay, we can give him both. I mean,
we can. I was thinking, you know, maybe, you know, we'll give Dwight King the NHL 17 cover, and then we can give Matt Green the Art Ross. He played one. I think he played a game this year. He might not have played a game. I'm not sure. It's been a long season.
Yeah, and as we know, the Art Ross Trophy goes to the player most adjudged to have maybe played a game this year. So.
Okay. I have breaking news now. Jonathan Quick did lead all goaltenders in penalty minutes this season.
Well,
that's
there you
Fear
go.
The Finn.
I mean,
that's from Fear the Finn.
Yeah.
Good job by – I think Jake probably running the account there.
Yeah.
So good job by Jake with that fact. Very important.
Yeah, I mean, you know. That's how I would vote for the Vezina Trophy if I had a ballot.
That's probably why Tim Thomas won. That's definitely why Tim Thomas won the Vezina,
right,
with his .950 save percentage that one year. I think that's why. It's the penalty minutes. Penalty minutes. Who else can we give an award to on the Kings?
What other awards have we not even given out?
I think we have to give the Kings fan base the Masterton Trophy because they've persevered through so much.
Oh, they really have. They really have.
That's,
I mean, it's been almost 2 years since they won a Stanley Cup. I mean, that's unheard of.
It's tough. Will Wheaton,
yeah.
Will Wheaton couldn't even stay up for games anymore because they were so late at night at 7:30.
I was so disappointed when I went out to see it. And he was like, oh, yeah, I'm checking out early tonight. I'm not watching.
I mean, I feel that way about the Kings, felt that way about the Kings a lot this year. Like, 7:30, like, suddenly felt like it was, like, 2 in the morning. Like, I got to watch the fucking Kings again. Oh, my God.
Right.
Luke Shen is shitting his pants again. But I didn't do that in the playoffs.
I think Jonas Enros should get the King Clancy award.
What is the King Clancy?
I have no idea. Jonas Enros should definitely get it.
Yeah, for sure.
Of course the Kings should win the Stanley Cup. I mean, I know they were eliminated or whatever, not in the playoffs anymore. I think they should win the Stanley Cup. The 2016 Stanley Cup should go to the Los Angeles team.
Wait a minute. The King Clancy is given to the player who best exemplifies leadership qualities on and off the ice. What the fuck is the point of the Mark Messier award?
Wait, what's the Mark Messier Bridgestone shit for then?
Do we stop giving out this award? No, they still give out both of these awards.
They give out both of the awards. Great. I love the NHL.
Breaking news, they give out two awards for the same thing in the NHL.
Oh, and I think Dustin Brown should get to play guitar with Nickelback at the award ceremony. I think that's what we should give him.
For sure, yeah.
Yep. Just on the hopes that maybe he takes out the entire band.
He never knows where his knees are going.
Yep.
I can't believe the King Clancy Award is given to the person who best exemplifies leadership qualities. What the fuck is the point of Mark Messier?
What's the wording of that one? How is that any different?
Mark Messier Leadership Award. That's literally the name of it. The Mark Messier Leadership Award is a National Hockey League award presented by Mark Messier on behalf of Mark Messier. It's not presented. It recognizes an individual as a superior leader within their sport. It's literally the same award.
Yep.
As a contributing member of... Okay, I'm sorry, but these are the same fucking award.
I guess the King Clancy's been around for a while, and I think it was mainly for people who made, like, big donations to, like, a charity or whatever. I don't know why they wouldn't retire that award once the Mark Messier Bridgestone money came in and they had this new one. That's hilarious that they're still awarding both.
Did you know that they used to give out this award monthly? It used to be a monthly award.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Brendan Shanahan won it, then Scott Niedermayer won it, then Sidney Crosby won it, then King fan favorite, my personal hero, Vinny LeCavalier won it, and then Roberto Luongo.
How do you judge a player's leadership ability month to month? Like, what's the process? What's the process for that?
That's a good question, but Roberto Luongo is the best leader in March of 2006-07. But Chris Chelios, who did not win it.
Was he captain of the Canucks at that point? I don't even remember.
He was, I think, the captain of the Canucks at that point. He hadn't pooped his pants yet. I know that. Maybe he had. That might have been by then.
Well, it showed leadership for him to actually use the toilet rather than just shit on the ice.
Okay, Chris, monthly recipients, I just named them all, but they didn't give out an award in October that year for reasons I don't know, or April, because the playoffs don't matter at all for leadership. That's not when leadership is important. But winner of that award was Chris Chelios, who did not win it in any month. So it was just his body of leadership work was the best, I guess. And then if we go down the line, very good leader and just general good person, Shane Doan won the award in 2011-12. Way to go, Shane Doan. You're the best leader we know.
They gave him all 12 months worth of leadership.
Yeah, they stopped giving the monthly award out. They were like, hang on, wait a minute, maybe we don't know how to judge monthly leadership, so we'll just stop doing that. I don't even remember Brendan Shanahan being on the New York Rangers, and he won the award for leading the New York Rangers to their November victories in 2006-07.
That was a legendary team with Ryan Hallweg, and I think Aaron Voros was probably on that team.
Was that Aaron Asham's team, too? Probably.
Probably.
He was on every team in 06-07, I think.
He was on every Atlantic Division team in the late 2000s. At the same time.
Pretty much. I'm curious how Scott Niedermayer was the best leader of the Ducks at that time when Chris Pronger was on the same team, and also with a team that probably had Ryan Getzlaff on it, who's now the captain of the team. How did Scott Niedermayer get the best leadership award? I don't get it. I don't get this award. I don't understand why it exists. It's pretty bad. I think we're running out of time now. So any parting words for the NHL and their ridiculous double award for leadership?
I think the entire Los Angeles Kings team should win both the leadership awards and the 2016 Stanley Cup. I mean, it's only fair at this point. So
Dustin Brown and Anze Kopitar did a very good job leading the Kings to exactly five games in the first round of the playoffs.
Exactly,
I'm Nick from Jules and the Crown. That's Derek. This has been our podcast. Thank
you. Go Ducks. Go Ducks tonight.
Go Ducks.
Go Ducks.